Fast Forward is a series from Tomorrow Unlocked by Kaspersky, because your digital life deserves complete protection. For augmented humans, securing this intimate tech is crucial to be able to live safely. Get protection with the new Kaspersky. Search Kaspersky on your smart speakers or check the show notes to start your free 30-day trial. Fast Forward is written and presented by Ghislain Boddington. Episode 5, Cyborg Shifts, Embedding Technologies in Our Bodies.
There is a future that we think we know already, one that seems as safe as yesterday. It lies somewhere between what we know and what we can imagine, between the limits of today and the possibilities of tomorrow. But this future has a hidden dimension, a mysterious secret area that we like to call the past. Trying to reinvent our own physical body brings to mind for many of us the 18th century horror story of Frankenstein by Mary Shelley, about a scientist who developed a secret technique to impart life into old body parts. Of course, this all goes badly wrong, and the moral of the tale is to warn us all off pursuing such experiments with our bodies. Body modifications have taken place across many centuries, and the first known example of attaching a prosthesis, an artificial substitute for a missing body part, is that of a big toe made out of wood and used by an Egyptian noblewoman who lived around 950 to 710 BCE. In the modern age, it is science fiction that has saturated us all with intense and challenging images of the human body, pushed to its extremes in cyborg superhero models, such as the Bionic Woman, Geordi LaForge from Star Trek, RoboCop and $6 Million Man. Of course, many of the most exciting medical advances post the 1930s have also flowed through from our sci-fi imaginations, linked to the technological extension, enhancement, and augmentation of ourselves. And there is a growing acceptance of embedding technology within our bodies, putting into question our understanding of the word natural. It is out of this dialogue between our imagination and our technologies that we have now evolved highly advanced prostheses and implants. Look at the great success of the Paralympic movement. This has importantly aided the change in our perceptions about the latent skills and abilities that lie within every human being and which are emerging with a little support from tech. A well-used and accepted medical implant of today is the pacemaker. First embedded into a human body by Swedish scientists in 1958, it demonstrated the huge potential of placing human-made devices within the body for the control of complex conditions. Nowadays, we have many medical implants and sensors aiding us with a wide variety of needs, from diabetic monitoring to birth control, from cochlear implants to deep brain stimulation for extreme motor neuron diseases. Some of these devices are evolving to allow data transfers to and from the body, integrating our living bodies further into our machine and digital worlds. Advanced prostheses of all types are also starting to use electrical and digital data transfers. This has inspired a fascinating global movement, one that is exploring the extended convergence of high-tech prostheses and implants. A growing group of people worldwide inherently feel the need to enhance their human bodies beyond the natural, for many reasons other than direct clinical need. Danny Claude is an upper limb prosthetic augmentation and product designer working with the Alternative Limb Project at Cambridge University in the UK. Her work is challenging the perception and boundaries of prosthetic design, incorporating new materials and design processes to extend the human form and not just for medical needs.
Our thumbs are so uniquely human. They really kind of make us human. When we touch our thumbs on our fingertips, that's what kind of sets us apart from other primates that have thumbs. And so I really wanted to zoom in and think about recreating this uniquely human movement. And that's why I created the third thumb. The third thumb is an extra robotic thumb, which attaches to your hand just on your palm. And it is controlled with the toes. It's a way to really explore augmentation, explore expanding the function of my hand. I chose the toes because if you're seated at a desk, we use our hands so much and our toes, we don't so much. So pressing down on your toes to use a third thumb on your hand, I see as a form of augmentation because we're taking away a little bit, which is the toes, and we're adding a significant amount, which is augmenting the hand. And then on top of that, you could then also then use a tool, like a hand tool, with the third thumb. We're using the third thumb as a way to better understand if you completely add to the body, how does the brain respond? Our first study looked at working with participants for 5 days. So we did pre and post fMRI scans of our participants and then got them to do 5 days of training with the third thumb. And then they got to take the third thumb home with them as well. So they were getting about 4.5 hours of thumb use per day. And what we saw in response was kind of quite high embodiment levels. People felt really connected to this piece of technology, which was really fun for me because they were seeing it in their own home and using it and having a play with it.
In the brain, our biological fingers are represented in our left and right hand areas. How did the participants' brains react to their third thumbs?
What we saw in that post-fMRI scan was how the fingers were represented in the brain. They'd shifted slightly. They'd slightly collapsed. We're not quite sure why, but we were creating change only after 5 days of using the third thumb. We need to recreate this. We need to understand why this is happening. We're not sure if this is a bad thing. We need to understand if how the fingers are represented in the brain, if they're kind of collapsing in a way to becoming smaller in order to make room for these augmentation devices. We did do a post-post fMRI scan a week after a week of non-use of the third thumb, and we found that their brain representation went back to the pre-training position. So that was really important to know that we didn't make a kind of lasting change on their brain. This technology is not going to go away. People are really interested in augmentation technology, especially motor augmentation. We're quite obsessed with productivity, and if this technology does become available on the market, especially in regards to the workplace, we need to understand if this is impacting our biological body, especially our brains, how much we can expand our motor abilities of our body, and what that then takes away from our bodies as well. If it's impacting the body negatively, we need to know that.
So if you are using a robotic arm for 5 to 7 hours a day, 5 days a week in your workplace, will your body get used to that augmentation device? What happens if, at the end of the day when you remove it to drive home, an accident occurs? Because, in the speed of reaction, your brain has forgotten that your robotic arm is not there to help. This is research into the complex connection and reflection that takes place between our body and our brain. Knowledge that is essential for all augmented developments. One of our little recognised yet imperative body and brain senses is proprioception, the awareness of the position and movement of the parts of our body, our spatial relativity to our location and our equilibrium.
Proprioception is really interesting. It is like a sixth sense that we have. It's how you can close your eyes and touch your nose with your fingertips. People don't really think about it like a sense just because it's not one sensory organ that is dedicated to it. There's a lot of biological senses that are creating that proprioception and awareness. What's really interesting about proprioception with the third thumb is that it's something, additional on the body that we're introducing that's brand new that the body hasn't been aware of before. And so what we're finding really interesting is that we are seeing an indication that there's proprioception that is developing with our participants that are using the third thumb for 5 days. So there's no added artificial feedback for the third thumb like some other prosthetics and wearable robotics have. I've got the motors on the wrist and the 2 degrees of freedom. We've got the feedback of the toes, of you pressing your toes on your ground. It's also proportional control. So you're feeling that pressure of your toe and you're getting the third thumb to move. And that's a learned kind of connection. And then you've got the stretchy parts that go around the middle part of your hand in between your biological thumb and your index. And then obviously on top of all that, you've got the sound of the motors. What I've learned through this collaboration is just how incredible our hands and especially our fingertips are. Being a maker and a designer, I do so much assembly work with my hands. My hands are literally my life, and I see that working with people who have lost a limb in which they were in a similar field. It's a massive shift, and I'm very grateful that I have full function of my hands to use in a daily life. Speaking with finger amputees, how traumatized they've been through just the loss of a finger. I had a finger amputee describe it as pulling the root of a tree out by a leaf. There's so much sensory information in our fingertips and our arms, but especially in our hands.
With these changes in our bodies and the merge with technologies, there are some serious considerations to take into account. Can our augmented body parts get hacked? How do we know if they will be supported for updates and maintenance? Let's head to the safety zone.
The Safety Zone with David M., Principal Security Researcher at Kaspersky.
Kaspersky did a survey a little while ago, and what came through that very strongly was that while there were almost two-thirds of people who would consider augmenting their bodies with technology to improve them in some way, 88% of them were nevertheless worried that their augmented bodies could be hacked by cyber criminals. We know that all the applications that we use, we need to update them periodically to stop hackers being able to manipulate them to get their code onto our computers. Well, you think about an internet-connected fridge, you think about any other computing device, it has a finite lifetime. And even within that lifetime of the physical device, there is the issue of, does it need updating to stop hackers? Does it need updating to enhance the functionality, to take advantage of the latest developments? Well, that certainly has got to be true also for physical enhancements to our body, because as we move forward with technology, then we need to be safe in the knowledge that these devices are going to bring the benefits without bringing potential harms as well. I think governments are unfortunately only beginning to sort of wake up to this. One of the things that the government's proposed legislation will include is manufacturers saying upfront how long the device will be supported for, how long they will provide updates, and what that mechanism is. We don't want to get to a point where it stops working or where it needs to be replaced or updated, and you could be left high and dry with technology. And indeed, if it isn't updated, if the firmware, if the central controlling code within that device isn't updated, potentially it becomes more vulnerable to attack by a criminal.
With so much of your life being digital, it's important to stay safe online. For more cybersecurity tips from Kaspersky, check the show notes.
The third thumb is an augmentation for bodies of all types, an enhancement tool which aims to give us extra body agility and skills. Implants too can be seen as augmentations. I have a subdermal smart implant which is in the soft pad of my hand between my thumb and my first finger. It has an NFC tag which links it to an app to monitor medications and store medical documents. But it's where implants and prostheses are converging that we are seeing the emergence of the next generation of bodies. They call themselves cyborgs. Most cyborgs see their body modifications as a personal exploration of their own identity. For some, it is to embrace specific skills. For others, it is to extend their senses and perceptions. Neil Harbison is a Catalan-born British-Irish-American artist who classes himself as trans species. He was completely colorblind from birth, seeing the world in grayscale until he decided to add a significant body augmentation to create a new sense in its own right, enabling him to feel color across a much wider spectrum than humans can see.
The antenna that I have implanted in my head is basically a color sensor that detects the vibration of the color in front of me, and it sends the vibration of the color in my skull, and then this vibration in my head becomes a sound. So I can feel and hear the vibrations of color from infrareds to ultraviolet. So if it's a violet or a blue, the vibration is higher, and if it's a red or an orange, the vibration is lower. So these vibrations become inner sounds in my head. So then I can literally hear the colors around me. At the beginning, the antenna was something external for me, but it slowly became more and more part of who I am. I had become technology, and not feeling the difference between software and brain is what really made me feel cyborg and made me feel that I was no longer using a wearing technology, but that I was technology. And that's what really connects me with the word cyborg, being a cybernetic organism, not only physically, because I'm physically united to technology, but also especially mentally and psychologically united to technology. Trans species are eco-centered. We add sensors and organs that already exist in other species usually. By adding sensors and organs, we feel that we are more alive during our life, because we reveal reality by adding sensors and organs that are not traditionally human, usually inspired by the observation of other species. I feel more connected to nature and to other species now that I've merged with technology than before. Like, there's many species that sense infrareds, ultraviolets. Also, adding new organs that other species have also connects you with other species. Having an antenna is not something that aliens have, it's something that many insects have. Sharing senses, sharing body parts with other species can make us feel more connected to them, and also revealing elements that nature has that we've never sensed before will also make us feel more connected to Earth in a way.
Neil's focus isn't just on colour. His life's work is about the expansion of our sensory abilities, the exploration of new senses, and the evolution of perceptions we have yet to discover.
I'm currently working on the creation of a new sensory organ that will allow me to sense the passage of time. We all have a sense of time, but we don't have an organ specifically designed to perceive the passage of time. It's a pair of wings at the back of my head, of my body, that will flap every X amount of time, and then my body will get used to this interval of time. And then when the brain gets used to a specific interval, someone, without me knowing, will change the interval, the space in the interval, and this should actually change my perception of time. The aim is to feel that time can go faster or slower by changing these intervals. The aim is to create time illusions that will allow us to modify our perception of time. In the same way that we can create optical illusions because we have an organ for the sense of sight, if we had an organ for the sense of time, we should be able to create time illusions.
But how is the wider acceptance of augmentation changing? One example is Neil's own passport, which now includes his photo with his antennae, making him one of the world's first legally recognised cyborgs. But he knows there is much positive advocacy work to do to educate others and to protect such evolutions. In 2010, he co-founded the Cyborg Foundation, an organization dedicated to the ethical and human rights issues surrounding technological enhancement of the human body. And they have started to work on a cyborg bill of rights.
After the issues I had with the UK passport office, I realized that there are some rights that cyborgs need to defend. One of them is, for example, to consider the implants as organs, not as devices. The right to decide who is allowed to enter your body. So my antenna has internet connection, so I could be physically hacked. So someone without permission could start sending colors to my head. There's no protection for this. So this is a right that I think cyborgs should have. Decide who is allowed to enter. The main one is the right to decide which organs and sensors we want to have. I mean, surgeries are still not legal. This antenna was implanted in my head illegally. It didn't go through bioethical committees, because most bioethical committees do not accept the addition of sensors and organs that are not traditionally human. So that's one of the main rights that we think we should be allowed to decide which organs and sensors we want to have. I believe that being human is not something static, something fixed. We've never always been like this. I don't think we've always been human. I think we've been first bacteria in the ocean, then we became something else on Earth, and we lived on trees. Now we are in this shape and form. We have this amount of senses and organs, but this is just temporary. So I think that it is natural for us to be trans-species, that we are constantly transforming ourselves into something else. The difference now is that we can decide what species we want to become by deciding which organs and senses we want to add. And this is a breakthrough. I think now we can do it through technology. Soon we will be able to do it biologically, not adding chips and metal, but biologically modifying ourselves. So I think this is the generation that can start deciding how we want to be in the future.
There is a huge shift taking place in what is considered a natural human being today. From life-saving and supported medical augmentations, we are moving towards the choice to become a cyborg, getting ever closer to the science fiction concepts we hold deep in our imaginations. Yet it is clear that significant knowledge still needs to be gained about the intricacy of our body-mind interface. Our sense of proprioception, that complex connection and reflection that takes place between our body and brain, has, in a way, become an extra special sense for this century, one that can enable us to enter our future. Many of us feel that the psychological merging with our technologies has already happened, especially for the younger generation born into this digital era, constantly attached to their mobile phones for social belonging. It's easy to imagine 18th birthday present requests in the future will be for the embedded smart device. As the physical merges with the digital, our biotechnological understanding will expand, and who can say what will occur across the next decades? At present, these convergences of implants and prostheses are helping many to be able to live life more fully. And the cyborg and trans species movement, as a community emerging globally, is revealing inspirational ways of living in future decades. The Bill of Cyborg Rights is, in fact, exploring the rights needed for all humans choosing to augment their bodies, whatever their reason. Of course, the other option is to reject our physical bodies totally and just download our brains for longevity. This would be a sad outcome to the beauty of our evolution, and the loss of our physical senses alone would be tragic, as they are still such an underestimated part of our worldly intelligence. Across season two, we cover a range of fascinating topics, including the metaverse, the ever-growing prevalence of data in and out of the home in Telegram to telepresence, women in gaming, and the concept of extending our lives through digital health in Extended Self, Our Future Digital Twins. We also celebrate the contributions of women in STEM and discuss the need for greater representation in the field. So make sure you are following us on your favourite podcast channel. You have been listening to Fast Forward. This has been a Sounds Fancy production with music by Simon James and Max DeWardner. You also heard the voices of my special guests, Danny Claude, Neil Harbison and David M. My name is Guylaine Boddington and I have been your writer and presenter.
Whatever business you lead, you need to bring your energy costs down. But how? It's true that smart energy technology can make a difference.
Those meters paid themselves off on the first day because they just proved that we were overpaying for energy and water.
But where exactly do you start? I'm Susie O'Neill, and in the next edition of Insight Story, Tech Trends Unpacked from Kaspersky, we'll be getting our heads around smart energy.
Data is one of the key resources that we have to be able to make some good decisions around your energy management.
Including hearing from a company that started reaping the benefits of smart energy technology.
In some stores, savings could be anywhere between 25 and 40%.
Find Insight Story, Tech Trends Unpacked for business leaders, wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to get ahead, you cannot afford to miss it.